This is the it's the Yuritzite today. I was before was in my shir today. He's asking the Rebbe, the Ish Kodesh, who lived a remarkable life and made a tremendous impact, much even after he was gone from the world. He's the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto, and while he was in the ghetto, he continued to be a source of inspiration to everyone else in the ghetto. He would give drushas. People wrote them down. They hid them in a canister, and later on, when they were doing some study, looking into what had happened in these areas, they came upon it, and they found it, and they brought it to Eretz Yisrael, a relative. We have today the Sefer called the Ish Kodesh. It's his Yuritzite today, so hopefully we'll be able to treat this day with the proper respect that it deserves, and take the lessons that that we'll hopefully pick up in the next few moments. Whenever I start a schmooze, I always call it a life-changing schmooze, as my students know. And I always add on, the last words was, if you let it. The reason why is because in any experience that you have in life, it doesn't have to be a schmooze. It could be you're walking in the park, and you witness something, you experience something. You have two choices when you experience something. You can try to take it to heart and say, what do I do with this information right now? Or you pass on to the next site, and you just go about your daily business. Anyone who is, in fact, a person who is searching for greatness in the world should never let a situation go by where he doesn't try to say to himself, what do I get from that situation? What I say today will only be as good as you want it to be. So I hope that you want it to be good and that, in fact, it will be effective. We're starting right now this Zman called Chorev Zman. The Shana Aleph guys don't know what that means yet, but the Shana Bet guys know this is the largest Zman by far throughout the entire year. It's more than double Elzman, more than double Kaitzman. It is the Zman where most growth, at least should be, happening based on the amount of time that it's spent together consecutively, not having vacation in the middle. This is the Zman to make it happen. And we believe, as Jews, that oftentimes the calendar that we have, if you look at the parshios surrounding the calendar, there should be some insights and some ideas that should help us take lessons. How do we spend this time the proper way so we can maximize? And there will be, Rabbi Blaus will be running mitzvahs over the course of this time, you'll see about it when it comes, that will be there to enhance this experience for you as well. But what attitude should we be taking from this point forward for the next number of months as we spend time trying to maximize the year which we came here for? We did not come here, I assume, I hope, just to watch more seasons on our telephone of whatever episodes that we're missing from home. We did not come here, I hope, just to follow our sports teams from a distance. That may be things that we may do on the side, maybe, but certainly that's not a priority. And anything that ever is happening, and it's hurting what we came here to do, then we're really, really messing ourselves over, and we have to make sure that we understand what we're supposed to be doing here. My student, alumni, Ehud Adler, reached out to me this morning, or I just saw it this morning, at least maybe a few days ago, he reached out to me with a text message. He asked me the following question. In Parshas Noach, we know that the people were punished by a flood. Where was the Midah Keneged Midah? What was the connection between the flood and the crimes that were committed? What was the connection? Just so you know, though I can't see all of your bodies, when I see you looking down, I know what you're doing on your phones. I'm asking you to put your phones away right now. So I mentioned the following Medrash. The Medrash states that the Jewish people, not the Jewish people, the people in the time of Noah were ganavim, they were stealing, but they were stealing minute amounts of money, less than a shekel of pruta even, that was not in a court of law held accountable for. Now, if you picture someone walking in and stealing like 2 pennies, you have to steal a lot of pennies to make it worth your while to take the time to do that. What are they doing that for? So there's 2 pshatim that I can think of. One of them is that anyone here ever lose a pencil? Show of hands, who lost a pencil in his past? Okay, most of us have. Anyone here look for that pencil for a long time after they lost it? Like, longer than they should have probably? 10 minutes. Where, did I lose my pencil? I think it was under somewhere. Now you have a pencil right next to you. You have another one. But not that pencil. Where'd that pencil go? And you're still like, it's like a mystery. But when we leave the world, we're going to ask Carlos Brussels. We're going to ask him, where'd my pencils go? Like, just show me all of them. Where they all ended up. There are so many. Why are we so bothered by this? It's annoying. It's bothersome. Now my pencil, I've used it for only 2 days and I lost it already. There are things in life that we do, that we have, that are just annoying for us. It's annoying. And it's challenging for us to miss out on something. A guy steals 2 pennies from you, he doesn't make a big living from that. What he gets, he gets you really annoyed. The people of that period of time were not there stam because they wanted to make a lot of money. They wanted to annoy each other. What's a proof? So Chazal say, be'etzem ha'yom hazeh, in the middle of the flood, of the day, Hashem brought the flood. Why? So Rashi quotes a famous medrash. He brought a flood there so that every person who was in the town and it was in the community and was in the world at the time would know they could never have stopped the flood from happening. It's not in where you're sleeping. It's not a secret. Happening in broad daylight. What would happen? Would it happen while they were sleeping? So it says they would have said to each other the following line. They would have said, had we seen it happening, we would have broken the teva. We would have taken our axes, we would have smashed the teva, and we'd take Noach down with us. What chacham would suggest such a reaction to the flood and the teva? If anything, grab your skis, hang on tight, and let the one thing that might save you, which is the teva, be a chance for you to survive. Why would they ever want to break it? Because they didn't care about themselves. They just wanted misery in the world. They were fine dying as long as Noach died with them. They were fine. They wanted to make each other lose things more than they wanted to get anything themselves. That's shot number one. That's not what I told Ehud. Shot number two, much more relevant to us, I think, I hope. None of us are here are terrible people like that. Want to make our friends suffer for no reason. Shot number two is that there is a lesson learned from the flood. The flood is many, many drops. If a single drop of rain, when a drop of rain comes, it's insignificant in itself. A second drop, insignificant. But as every single drop begins to fall, you have a mass flood. He was teaching us, the generation, but more importantly us, there is no action that you do that goes unnoticed or is not affect a person in some way. There's not a single drop of action in your life that does not impact yourself in some fashion. Nothing. Therefore, we thought we did small stealing, it doesn't matter at all. Hashem brought a few small drops of rain until all those drops build up to much more than just a drop. It's very challenging for a person to live separate lives. A life of behaving properly, learning, going to minyan on time, having a mishmar experience, and then having an extracurricular life. It doesn't have to work by, it's not a weight system where, well, you balance it out. That means that it's a wash. The learning that you do, the davening that you do, whatever you're working on, it's very challenging when you're adding in drops that are the antithesis of this experience. Nothing that we do goes unnoticed. If that's the case, we have to figure out how do I make the right drops fall in my cup that will give me the best experience possible. How do I know what to do? How do you know where to go from this? Where does one head to try to find the right drops? So I was learning yesterday with Zach Fishman and with Zach Lowinger, coincidentally, separately, but they both were Zach and it was the same day. But the same exact line we were learning came up twice. The same exact line. The line, actually, I think it was Moshe Cohen. I apologize, Moshe. I think maybe you apologize. You were one of them. I don't know which Zach was not one of them, but the line was, it says, there's a mitzvah, v'alachta bedrachav. There's a mitzvah to walk in the path of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's a mitzvah. Mahu rachum af atarachum. You want to know what way to channel your energies? Is that you follow God. However He acts in the world, you try to act in the world as well. We're not left in a mystery. What do I do? How do I live my life the best way? You follow the path of God. He's a racham, you be a racham. He's kind, you be kind. He doesn't get angry, you shouldn't get angry. That's the way a person is living his life. He's supposed to be working in a fashion where everything he does is following God. There's another thing that God does as well, besides racham, and he doesn't get kas. It's very important for us today. I think the most important thing I'd like to leave you with, this idea we'll build on right now. The idea called Seder. I don't mean like morning Seder. I just mean Seder like a schedule, like order. Kadosh Baruch created a world full of Seder. Things rise and they set. things work in a certain fashion. The Chazon Ish has an unbelievable beginning to his Sefer called Emunah B'Tachon, where he describes the Seder of the body. The way the body works, every last piece and detail have to go so in sync at the right speed. If it wouldn't work that way, our bodies would break down. Life is all about having Seder. Success in life is about planning for it. I was learning with Amir the other day. I saw him beforehand. Amir Braun. And we learned the Vilna Gaon together. And the Vilna Gaon points out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for some strange reason, when it came to separating the Dor HaHaflaga, who are building the tower of Babel, he said, Ahava, let's go and prepare for this. Bring them down and disperse the people. What does Hashem need to do with Ahava? Why must he prepare? Vayomer Hashem Yehi Or Vayehi Or. Vayomer Hashem Yehi Dispersion Vayehi Dispersion. What's Hava? Why prepare? He says because the people in the time also prepared. They prepared to bring down the heavens or to bring a tower up to the heavens. And usually preparation breeds success. If you have a game plan and you stick to it and you work hard for it, you will be successful. Almost always. And since they prepared, Hashem wanted to teach us that you must, quote unquote, prepare to counter their preparation. Because generally, preparation is effective. When you come in somewhere with no game plan, I'll figure it out as it comes, it's almost guaranteed for failure. Almost guaranteed. You have to come in with a thought, with a mindset, with a game plan. Where does the game plan come from? So now, good, I need a game plan. I need a Seder, I need a game plan. Be like Hashem, he has a Seder, I want a Seder. I don't know what Seder to pick. There's a lot of Seders out in the world. You open the newspaper, plenty of people in the world doing different things. How many Seder I should be picking myself? So, I'll tell you a story. This happened very recently. I'm zocher to teach in my community some adults. About 10 adults and I learned together every night at Masechah Sukkah for about a year already. We're almost done. And it's a very unique program. I didn't start it. I follow the Seder of the person who started it, Rav Dov Newman from Muncie. And I was speaking to someone last week who was having a little bit of a struggle. I felt like I was back in yeshiva, even though I was speaking to someone who was married with children. But the same question I have with guys in yeshiva. I don't know, I'm not feeling anymore. Burning out, it's been a long, you know, time, and it's just hard. I can't commit every day. You know, everything you could possibly imagine. I felt like I was mom just talking to all of you. Just an older version of all of you, and married with children. And he said to me the following line. This was my top guy, my top man. My top man. He knows the second parak of Sukkah, Baal Peh, Kimat Baal Peh. Hopefully I'll bring them all here in a few months from now. You can test them yourself. 10 Baal Batim who work full time and are holding as well as, trust me, much better than I am. Much better than I am. You tell them a word to tell you how many times it's found. I'll just tell you a story just to explain to you how well they know this. There was a person that David and I are both very close with. Was in the program, and there was a word, the word achve, aleph chet vav yud, which means to gesture. I came up with the Gemara, daf nun aleph or something like that, if your daf was on. So he goes in the group, he's like, where else did that word come up? He asked the group, in the whole sukkah. So I'm like, I don't remember, you know. And some guy's like, come on, that's like saying, where does ibaylu come up? It's like, it comes all the time. So I'm like, it doesn't come all the time. So he says, it comes up one more time, it comes up in daf yud tesma beis, he says. And he finds it. So I'm like, okay, it came up there also, for sure, but I don't believe that it's not anywhere else in the 50x dapim of Sukkah we've done already. I'm sure it's somewhere else. And so he says, no, it's nowhere else. So I said, you know, I'm going to test you. I'll go to the Bar Ilan computer, and I'll test you. And I went to the Bar Ilan computer with my boys a few days ago, and I went online and I said the word Achve. And it came up three times. Not two, three. It was wrong. I said, close. Still pretty good. He's like, no, it's two. That's wrong. He said, show me the daf it's on. So I looked at the computer, and I don't know why it came up, but it wasn't on the page. It wasn't on the page. It wasn't there. Now, this is a guy who learns. You can go online, you can check later on, you can type it yourself, Achve. Look in the Bar Ilan, but it's not an hour Gemara that we have. It's a guy who learns for an hour a night, at least with me. He works a nice job, and he works very seriously in it. But what he has is he has something called a Seder. And he does not miss the Seder. Back to our guy. Top guy I got for the first month, spitting out second parak easy. Burned out. He says to me the following line, okay? He says to me, I've never felt in my life simcha like I felt for that month. Now, he feels depressed now because he doesn't have that experience. Currently, he's going through a hard time working on the learning. I've never had in my life. Now, he's married. He has children. He's never felt, he didn't say even simcha light. He said, I've never felt like simcha. I know what true simcha actually is now. Could you imagine a person who's 40 years old, married with children, has a job, but felt that he's never had simcha until he knew what it meant to sit and learn strong. To wake up every single day and know from day, you go to wake up in the morning to go to sleep at nighttime, you felt connected. That and only, not also that, that and only that breeds simcha. Doesn't mean you have to learn the entire day. Could be you don't even learn any part of that day. But your day, from the time you wake up to go to sleep, is connected to the Ribono Shel Olam, to the source of everything in our life. When you open your eyes and realize that from the time you open your eyes, so you close those same eyes, that and only that will give you simcha. There's a sefer called the Zav Mishpah, written by Rav Reichman, one of Reichman's Rebbeim, Moshe Mol Shapira, and in it he told the following story. So there was a bid, it's a very big kavod to open up the Aron Kodesh for Ne'ila. Psicha for Ne'ila. Especially when she was davening Ne'ila, especially to be closer to Sheba and Ne'ila, the Kedusha that we all felt on Yom Kippur. It's a bid to open the Aron for Ne'ila. It's a big bid, it's a big skulas for the year, and the price was like skyrocketing. And down the final two bidders, one by the name of Rothschild, you may have heard of the name beforehand, and one by a guy who was less known in the community. Back and forth, back and forth. I'll give you a dollar amount. I don't know how much it was in rubles, how much the currency is today. $50,000, says Baron Rothschild. $75,000, says the other man. Hush over the crowd. $150,000, Baron Rothschild. $250,000, says the other man. A gasp. Has they ever sold more than 200? Going once, going twice, sold to the man in the front. The guy next to him says to him, wow, it's a lot of cash dropping. Baruch Hashem, Sikh Ma'ila. He's like, thank you. He goes, Mazel tov, I'm a big couple. Thank you. He says, but can I ask you a question? The man who just bid for it says, the guy says, yeah, sure, what is it? He goes, what's psicha? Guy says, what's that? You just dropped $250,000, I don't know what you even pay for. He says, no, I have no idea what I pay for. Why would you ever get that amount of money? Because you don't know what you pay for. He said, because I know Baron Rothschild, and he knows his stuff. And if it's important to him, it's got to be really important also to me. So I bid for it. You don't have to even understand it sometimes. You don't have to even know why it's important. But someone who I look up to and respect feels important, then I've got to be important to me also. So I'll make it my business to try to live in a world where my Rebbeim, my parents, a world of simcha that they describe, I go to my Rebbeim's home for Shabbos. And you see what it means to have simcha with the children singing the Shabbos Miros, giving Divrei Torah. When you experience that, you'll see a simcha level that you're going to want to get a piece of. And it comes through one way. It comes through a connection with the Ribono Shel Olam, with God. It means that you spend your day, and this is a very important line to understand, doing things that you'll be proud of later on in life. There are a lot of things that are fun. If you will not be proud of that action in your life, that does not lead to simcha. An action that you do that will lead to happiness in life, your kids know about it later on, you'll be proud they know about it, that action will be what leads to simcha. An action like that. We want to have big targets. Big targets of how to get simcha. But we also have small steps to get there. I'll tell you a personal story that happened with me one time, and what I did, I think it will hopefully shed light to help also in this area. Let's say you have a target, you want to finish this mesechta, you want to connect to God, you want to dive better, whatever it might be. So when I was living in Florida for 3 years, and there's a rabbi of our community, Rabbi Kenny Brander, who was like a, Baruch Hashem, he ruled strong in the community, and the people who worked for him, myself included, he ruled strong. And he told you, go somewhere, you went there. So he told me I had to go to give a shir on Shavuos night to a community, a reformed shul in East Boca. Now, East Boca at the time, I heard it better now, was not a good neighborhood to be going in. And they had to have a police car trail me with an attack dog in it to protect me from my walk back home. So I was about in summer heat in Florida. It was a schmitzy day, schmitzy night. I get my shear and I walk back with this car and this dog like follow me the entire way home. And I was like, it's a really weird experience to do, walking through East Boca. So I started to like, I'm like, so long, it's going to take so long. I started to play a game with myself. And I don't know if it before, but if you notice, you look in the street, you see like, or sidewalks, you see cracks in the sidewalk. Over here on the floor, we have many cracks in our tiles over here. They're supposed to be there, they're part of their tiles. And I would race myself 10 tiles from now. How fast am I 10 tiles from now? You know? Yes, I will. And I keep on walking that way. And I'd give myself a little target, I'd aim for the target, and then I'd always win because I was against no one but myself. So it was perfect. I was very victorious that day. I had a big plan, and I took small targets to get there. You can have a great, great target in the future, and you might get there in the end. But it demands that you work slowly, small pieces here, a victory over there. That's the key to success. But the most important part of that key is that you need a plan. Anyone here ever heard of a person, I don't know if I've passed it in yet, but John Gotthard? Anybody ever heard of him before? You heard of him? Anyone else ever heard besides Yisrael? Anybody else? No. Who was Yisrael?
Worked on NASA.
Okay, so he did a number of things. We'll get to that in a minute. I don't know if he worked on NASA or not, but he was a person who accomplished the following feats. I'll list, even though he has a lot of them, I'll list some of them, okay? He explored the Nile River, Amazon River, Congo River, Colorado River, Rio Coco, Nicaragua River. Nobody was one of them. He studied in the Congo, New Guinea, Brazil, the Sudan, Australia, Kenya, the Philippines, Tanzania, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Alaska. He climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, Mount Kenya, the Matterhorn, Mount Fuji, Mount Vesuvius, etc., etc. He photographed Niagara Falls, Yosemite Falls, Sutherland Falls, New Zealand, Victoria Falls. He explored underwater the coral reefs of Florida, Great Barrier Reef, the Red Sea, Fiji Islands. He visited Great Wall of China, etc., etc. I'll just set some interesting ones. He skin dived, I don't know if that's a thing, but to 40 feet, held his breath 2.5 minutes underwater. Okay. He. What's that? One second, we're not done, Rebbe. 1 second. He built his own telescope. He ran the mile in 5 minutes. He read the Bible from cover to cover. He milked a poisonous snake. Who knew? He married and had children. He lived to the 21st century. There's a list that actually he accomplished, but he made a list when he was 15 years old of 127 things called his life list that he wanted to accomplish. 127 things he lived. Everything I read is on the list also, and he accomplished those things. He missed out on a few. He missed out, by the way, on Yam Al Yam. He wanted to go from sea to sea. He missed it. So you can all accomplish that and tell him he got that one even though he missed it. He was 15 years old when he made that list. 15 years old at his dining room table, lived in Los Angeles. And he wrote my life list with 127 goals. And he accomplished 109 of them. He is a God all door, not in Torah, but in having a game plan and seeing it through. He may be the gadol of having a game plan, a secular, and seeing it through. Most important thing was he had a game plan. That's the most important thing. One of my most, to me, a powerful story, just what it means to have a game plan and to see it through and to understand why we have game plans. There was a story I read one time in Rav Pesach Kron's, one of his Maggid books. There was a woman in Russia. This woman that we know, she had a baby boy, and we knew at the time that the government was not fond of a Jewish ceremony. And among the ceremonies of a baby boy is a circumcision, is a bris milah. And if they caught you doing a bris, you were sentenced to jail for years. And it was a to-do. They would know when you had a baby, and they would watch you like a hawk to make sure nothing ever took place. And you had to wait months and months to have a baby, to have a bris for the baby. This woman finally, when the child is close to a year old, maybe even closer to 2 years old, I forget the exact details, she finally found the right time and the right place and invited only her closest family and the mohel to circumcise her son. And when they circumcised this baby, this young child, they gave the baby to the mother, she kissed her son and she fainted. They woke her up, gave her son back, she kissed her son, she fainted. Stop giving her the baby at that point, because it's pretty dangerous for the baby to be in a fainting mother's hands. They said, what is going on here? Like, do you have a condition we should know about? She said, no.
Were you fainting? He said, because
my son needs a bris milah. He needed one. And I was terrified that as he got older and he didn't have one, I would just chicken out. I would never give it to him. I made the following neder. I would not kiss my own son until I gave him a bris. I wouldn't kiss him. A mother, the first thing she wants to do with her child is to give him a kiss. She didn't kiss her own son for 2 years. Why? Because she had a target in mind. I need my son to get a circumcision. If I do not do something drastic, I will never give him one. I know I won't. I'll take away the thing that means the most to me in the world, my affection for my child. And the moment she finally kissed her son, 2 years of pent-up mommying, she just wanted to give her child. She couldn't body contain it. She passed out. Can you imagine the Mesiras Nefesh? It's because there was a target in mind, a fear that she had, and a promise she made to herself to make sure the target was filled. I found in my Gemara, I had a real nostalgic moment. I found in my Gemara my schedule when I was trying to bet. Masechta Sukkah, we learned in Shalom when I was there. Rabbi Zinkin, where are you? Your name was on it. Rabbi Chavrusas, back in the day. Represent. I found my schedule. So looking back at your schedule, you know, I don't know how many years ago? 23 years ago? Whatever. Anyways, doesn't matter. It's called a game plan. I can promise you right now, I'm not saying it's good. Maybe this isn't good. But this wouldn't have happened without a schedule. You wouldn't be where you are in life, wherever you are in life, without a schedule. Nothing that you do will ever happen without a game plan, without sacrificing, without hoping and dreaming and plotting. Doesn't always work, though. The plan doesn't always work. I'll bring a proof from last week's parsha to this week's parsha, and I'll end with this. And with this, and then one more thing after this. Very, very quickly. This week's parsha, we're told, a very bizarre pasuk. It says, Perakid Beis pasuk, hey, Vayitu Lechaz Arza Kanan, that Avram with Sarai and Lot and all the people that he inspired along the way went to go towards Canaan. And check this out. Vayavo Arza Kanan. And they got there. Impressive, right? I went today with other rabbis to Torah Traga, and I got there. Torah worthy? I'm not sure I'll put that in the Torah. If you look back in last week's Parsha, I'll read you a different pasuk. Vayikach Terach. Terach takes his son Avram and his grandson Lot and his daughter-in-law slash daughter Sarai. Vayitu Meor Kasdim Lechaz Arts. They went to go to Canaan. They didn't get there. And not only that, Parsha ends, Vayamas Terach B'charon. He died there. He had a bucket list of one. Didn't get done. Well, that case, I guess Avram was pretty significant in the end. He actually accomplished his goal. It's true that I got the Torah Traga today and the day before, etc., etc. Hashem tomorrow as well. But to go back in those days and make that journey and sacrifice everything. Sacrifice. Artzicha. Moladcha. Beis Avicha. And you get there in the end? Noteworthy. Most people don't get there in the end. What is there? So there depends. When I was younger, there was a commercial. A Gatorade commercial. You know, it was a one-on-one between Michael Jordan and Michael Jordan. It was obviously trick photography. It wasn't two of them, it was only one of them. But no one else could play Michael Jordan. He was the best. Only he could play against himself. You can never measure a person how great they are unless you measure against yourself. You, each and every person among us has a one-on-one battle with ourselves. There's the you that's supposed to become you in the end. The you when the channel off is finished. What's supposed to happen to you. And there's the you that will be the person that ends up going through the year experience. Your job is to look identical to that person. Your job is that no one should be able to pick you and your real you or your fake you apart. That's your job. And I'll give you one small fright, if I could. And we'll end with this point, for real. In Parshas Bereishis, we say, Vayehi Tov Me'od, at the end, it was the creation was very, very good. Not as good, very good. And the Medrash says, you know what was really good? The best part of it all? Death. That's really good. Tov HaMavis. That's the best. Excuse me? Mavis is the best good? So Torah Tamima says the following pshat. Torah Tamima says, you know why it's the best good? I don't even have an assignment, an English paper due in 4 months. You know, paper for the end of the year is the following thing. You have 4 months to finish it. Anyone ever had that beforehand? Or the paper at the end of the year? Anyone here ever do it more than 2 weeks before it was over? Ugh. There's always one of you in the crowd, Avi. Most of us! 4 months? Okay, I'll get back to that. What a deadline gives you is it makes it urgent. If it's due tomorrow, that night, you spend all time doing it 4 months from now? Somewhere in the back of your under your locker, you know, behind 2 weeks ago's lunch that's rotting away. Maybe there you find it in a month from now. Maybe. Deadlines means urgency. This experience you're about to have right now, this zman right now, you're about to have with your bet. This experience you have right now with your rebbeim and your friends will never happen again. This is a one-time deal. And it's running out. Time's running. Started already. And it's clicking towards the deadline. You have the opportunity in front of you to amass excellence, to seek the greatest simcha in the world, which is not one that you'd ever be embarrassed about. I didn't say the most fun. I didn't say that. The greatest level of simcha. And it's all in your hands. And it all starts with a game plan. A game plan means a schedule. It means a goal. It means a dream. That's a game plan. Roommates should game plan together. Should game plan together. A room should make sure we're all up for minyan every day, early for the week. Should have also a nice flesh dinner. On Wednesday night, not Thursday night, don't forget, you're in here Thursday nights. Every single person should together partner with somebody else. Who could be my partner to push me and I push him back? There's a group of people that I learn with, or I learn and they learn also, called the Shas Club. You learn for 2 mishnayos a day. We just started Beitza yesterday. 2 mishnayos a day, you finish Shas in 6 years. Shas! It's a big thing to say, Shas, but it's 2 mishnayos a day. Can you imagine, as you're starting your first year in graduate school, having a celebration of finishing all of Shas? 2 mishnayos a day. That's all it requires. It's all about a game plan, a target. If you want to succeed anywhere in life, you need a game plan and a target and people to do it together with. Let's make this man a time when we have the experience not of a terach. Our goals are set and we end up falling short of it. Not even 109, 127 goals to accomplish. Let's be like an Avram who we praise and we laud in the Torah. He wanted to get to Canaan, and in the end, he got to Canaan. You should have a meaningful zman, a powerful zman, and a great day.